Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hi guys, this is Stefan from the podcast. Just wanted to put in a quick message before you enjoyed this week's show to let you know that we had some technical difficulties in recording this week's show. We've been experimenting with some video software for the YouTube channel, and for some bizarre reason, it didn't record my audio on my microphone. It recorded it through my phone speaker, which is why I sound like I'm talking in a house full of mirrors. So I can only apologize for that. And I just wanted to let you guys know that we are working on it. So hopefully the audio should be back to normal for the next show. And we just like to thank you for sticking with us and enjoy the show. Cheers.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's sein Rhythmus, als gäb's sein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing. I'm your host Manuel Feit. Here's Stefan Bienkowski, and yeah, you're right, you can actually see us. This is the first audio-video presentation. Obviously, if you're listening to the normal podcast edition, you won't be able to see us. But some of you, I guess, will be watching this on YouTube. So yeah, here we are, live in flash.
How's it going, Stefan? Technicolor. Yeah, very well. I think it's going to be really interesting doing this in video because we're going to have to like actually pay attention to each other for a change and not just like answer tweets and emails while the other one is ranting about something.
We never do that, right?
The worst thing is always when someone starts fighting with me on Twitter and I cannot help but like respond. So yeah. When you're answering a question, like you could probably literally see me tweeting people while you're talking on their podcast. So gonna have to pay attention this time.
Yeah, absolutely. yeah, this is going to be maybe awkward at times, but yeah, we have a lot to discuss. It was an insane match day, Stefan. Super Sunday. I'm not sure. Do you think it lived up to its billing off the top before we discuss all the other stuff?
Yeah, I think for the most part it did. I mean, we'll get into it. In fact, I thought two teams were extremely disappointing, but one team were disappointing in a fun way and one team were disappointing in a boring way. You know, no prizes to guess what that is, but yeah, I thought it was enjoyable. I think there's a lot to talk about as well, though, so we should probably just jump straight into it, shouldn't we?
Yeah, let's do that.
This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. Football is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your football betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, matchup info, player news, and game trends. And as your continued source for all sports wagering info, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events like MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag, betonline.ag, to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEV, B-L-E-A-V, BELIEV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Yeah, I guess we'll start with Super Sunday then. Or do you want to start with all the other boring stuff first and make our listeners, watchers, get there first?
Well, yeah, then should we do Bayern? Should we get Bayern out of the way first?
Let's do Bayern. I mean, let's start with Bayern because I thought the AGM was actually quite interesting too. If you're into numbers, that is, and a few of the numbers. And yes, I am looking at my phone because I am looking at the numbers. Don't judge me. I think the numbers were interesting because the numbers were up. For the first time in 3 years. I also thought it was really interesting, and they obviously were quite proud of that, right? So their turnover this year was 665.7 million euros, a profit of 17.1 million before tax, which is up from 5 million from last year. And it's the third year in a row during the pandemic that they have made a profit. And they're the only team other than Real Madrid that managed to get through this pandemic year in Europe, not just in the Bundesliga, but in Europe, to get through the pandemic without with making money every year. And that's kind of remarkable, I think.
Yeah, it's Bayern being Bayern, I suppose, isn't it? They pride themselves so much on this profit making. And, you know, when you dive into the kind of numbers, it makes a lot of sense why they make profits every year, because we always get people on Twitter saying, to me, oh, you know what, the Bundesliga is so boring, why doesn't Bayern just give all their TV money to Dortmund so it's a level playing field? And I have to say, look, Bayern could give away their TV money every year and probably wouldn't make any difference. I mean, it would make some difference, obviously. It's like 10 or 15% maybe, or maybe more than that. But the kind of main bulk of that money comes from their commercial deals. They're like, I actually think they're the best. I think they have the highest commercial revenue in Europe. Obviously, like, when you add it all up together in terms of TV revenue, they don't really, they're still behind, I don't know, like Real Madrid and maybe Manchester United or something. But those commercial deals they have, those kind of regional powerhouses like Audi, Adidas, Allianz Arena, I guess, Allianz to an extent, you know, and there's obviously some commercial deals there which fans aren't too happy about. But
yeah.
That's what really powers Bayern Munich every year. And that's kind of what gets confirmed at these AGMs every year, isn't it?
Yeah, so you mentioned it. It was 221 million euros is the revenue from marketing and sponsorship. They put it in one pot. Yes, there is one deal in particular that is controversial. That's the sponsorship deal with Qatar, which makes up 20 million euros a year. So less than 10% of them. So they could probably do without it, to be fair. And I think they are looking at it. At the end of the day, I think the only way they're getting rid of that deal is they find someone who not necessarily pays more, but a similar amount. Like, let's say, like, I know Lufthansa is probably not going to be it because Lufthansa has its own problems. But let's say Lufthansa comes in with 15 million euros. They probably jump on that and end the sponsorship deal with Qatar. Simply because, like, the 5 million euros wouldn't hurt them, or they could be making it up somewhere else. So I think that is controversial, and it is being controversially discussed internally. It doesn't help that their former president, Uli Hoeneß, likes to rock the boat and still acts like it's his personal fiefdom. What did he say to Ott? He thought Ott is, of course, the member who has been very actively outspoken against this Qatar deal. And made a presentation. I thought it was good. I think it was not aggressive towards the club. He laid open all the necessary talking points about the issues that we have with Qatar and issues that a lot of people have with Qatar. And then Uli Hoeneß, as he left the Audi Dome, which is the basketball stadium, right, went past Ott and pointed at him and yelled at him and said, "Your presentation was an embarrassment. This is Football Club Bayern Munich and not Amnesty International." You can laugh about this stuff, but it's also kind of serious. I mean, like, this is 2022. You can't do this anymore.
Yeah, Uli Hoeneß, not exactly Mr. Moral, upstanding citizen, of course, at Bayern Munich. But he just kind of plays that role, doesn't he? That's the role. Yeah. He just seems to almost revel in it. I remember last year when if I'm not mistaken, they had to cancel. They were not even not cancel, but they had to walk off the stage, I think.
Yeah.
And he was in the front row, and the cameras just turned on him, and he just looked absolutely bewildered by the whole incident. He's like, what is going on here? Which is maybe quite a good kind of sign of how things are changing at the club. Bayern have always been like the establishment club. They've always been kind of like, you know, my impression of Bayern is always like kind of like old guys smoking cigars behind closed doors sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, there's obviously a new generation of fans coming through who aren't happy with that, or aren't happy with the way things are doing. But that's just football. Like 20 years ago, people were arguing about whether football clubs should promote smoking, whether it should promote, you know, oil companies or whatever else. And they're now having that debate about gambling companies as well. I'm sure in 10 years they'll be banned. So it's just the way society moves on. But Bayern are obviously dragging their heels until they can ensure that they still make money from another deal.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it, right? And I think that's ultimately how it's going to play out. I think that Herbert Heiner, the president of Bayern Munich, Dresden, the CFO, so the financial officer, was done obviously an incredible job. He leaves at the end of the season. These financial numbers are his baby. And Oliver Kahn, I think they are very much in charge now. Obviously, Uli Hoeneß is still on the board. He still makes decisions, but he is not the almighty figure that he once was. And you can't have a club with 295,000 members, which is also the new membership number, and not expect some sort of controversy. That's a lot of people that have a voting share, right, at the end of the day. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought too, I mean, in a lot of ways, this AGM was, as you pointed out already, a lot less controversial than it was a year ago. So that's positive. And then I think, you know, and this is a good transition to what happened on the field on Sunday, on Super Sunday. I think Bayern Munich went into this Saturday meeting. Yes, they got the job done midweek against Viktoria Pilsen. They have obviously dropped the 2 points against Borussia Dortmund last Saturday. And then there was a potential there that if this Super Sunday hadn't gone to plan, that, you know, this, all of this could have turned into a very different direction. And yeah, they got the job done. 5-0 against Freiburg. Yeah. I mean,
do you know what? Like, and on the previous show last week, we were talking about predictions. And yeah. I think I predicted like a really narrow win for Bayern. But excuse me, I remember saying, like, on paper, Freiburg should cause an upset here. They should take a point from Bayern. Bayern have been terrible this season. Freiburg were actually the best away team in the Bundesliga going into this game. But I said there's just something in my gut that makes me say Bayern are going to get over the line. And it's just so typical of Bayern and of Dortmund, which we're going to talk about, that like one of them stumbles, but one of them finds a way to go over the line. It would have been interesting if they kind of flipped the scheduling of these games. And if Bayern had played first and then Dortmund played second, because I do think sometimes, in my experience, Bayern almost kind of, once they know Dortmund have tripped up, that just seems to really galvanise them. I know players will say, well, we don't watch these results come in, but they do, of course they do. But yeah, I was really disappointed in Freiburg in general. I thought they were terrible. I watched that game, even like the opening 20 minutes, I actually spent the whole game thinking, why has Joshua Kimmich got so much space in the middle of the park? It's just something that really stood out to me. Yeah. And I think it really summed up that game in the way that Freiburg just kind of like, they just gave Bayern so much respect. They looked so scared. I thought Matthias Ginter in particular was quite poor for at least one of the Pupa Moting goals. But the whole team in general were just really quite disappointing. Of course, Christian Streich would probably, I don't know what I just said after the game, but he would probably say, look, we're Freiburg, we're not expected to go to the Allianz and these games, you know. But I just thought it was quite disappointing considering what it was being built up as, and I guess, you know, Freiburg will just kind of get on with it. But it now means Bayern second, and they'll probably take quite a lot of confidence from that game. But my main kind of takeaway from a Bayern point of view is just that they just kind of pulled Choupo-Moting out of storage. They blow the dust off him, stick him up front, and they spent a whole week talking, you know, Heiner, the president, spent a whole week giving interviews saying, we don't need to sign a number nine. We've got this amazing array of attacking players. And, you know, it's a brave new world. You don't need target men anymore. Then Nagelsmann comes along on Sunday and just sticks this old target man up front. And it works wonders. He did a great job.
Yeah, you almost wonder if Nagelsmann did that on purpose. he heard all the comments and is like, I'm going to play Choupo on the weekend and see how that goes. And as you said, it worked out really well. I thought Choupo-Moting had a great game too. I think a lot of people expected Matisse Tell to maybe start there, and obviously it didn't. Leroy Sané, I thought, had a really good game too. Fitting that he scored his goal in the same fashion than Mr. Arjen Robben, who was actually in attendance. So that was a nice little touch, I thought. Yeah, I thought they were really good. I thought I was really disappointed by Freiburg's performance. Maybe I should have known better, because Christian Streich has never won at the Allianz Arena, right? That's a place mm-hmm. that he's struggled with. And I mean, there is certain locations where coaches or certain tactics just don't work. I thought the big problem with Freiburg, and I've watched them a bit this year, and I went to Freiburg to see them up close as well, is that they did not play the way that they usually play. It was almost like they didn't trust what made them strong all season long. You know, they were not compact enough in defense. As a setup, having Kevin Schade up front, sort of a fast target man who can spring Bayern's defense, I think was a good idea, but they just didn't execute it very well. I think you could see them slipping all over the pitch at times. And that's highlights to me that they were maybe also not, they were almost nervous and to rise to the occasion in many ways. And yeah, I think, you know, there's two things at play here. One, Bayern Munich came up firing because, as you pointed out, they saw the results elsewhere. And then on the other hand, Freiburg just, maybe Freiburg saw the results elsewhere and said, oh man, we can really open the gap here. And they just fell completely short. It was almost like they were Bambi on ice in some ways. And I think too, like, yeah, you can take so much, like put so much and say, okay, well, yeah, they're slipping and all over that. But those are little tiny details that can make a difference. There was one occasion where I think it was Schade that broke away and maybe could have made it 1-1 and just didn't have the footing. And who knows how this game ends, right? If he does score there. And then I think the other thing too, this really fell into Bayern's lap as well. Nagelsmann made this huge point a couple of weeks ago that for them it's so important to score early on. And when they do score early on, they usually walk away with a positive result. And they did here. They scored early on and they put this game aside really quickly. They never really gave Freiburg an opening to walk into mm-hmm. this game. And I think, you know, those are the things that just stood out to me. And as good as Bayern were, and they were excellent, Freiburg really gave them, played right into their hands as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great opening. Was it opening goal, I think, the Gnabry header? Was that the first goal?
That was the Choupo goal, right?
Oh, right. Okay, yeah, sorry. I was thinking of the Gnabry goal. I think that was the second one, which was just so impressive as well. I was just going to say, you know, it hasn't been a good weekend for Germany, for German central defenders. Matthijs Ginter had a really poor game, and as we're kind of talking about the Dortmund game, I actually thought...
Oh, you... Really... Sorry, let me correct that. Gnabry had the first goal. Choupo had the second. Did, yeah. Yes, you're right.
yeah, Choupo had a great second goal. But yeah. It was Choupo's second. It was the second goal that I thought Ginter was particularly poor in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I completely agree with you, you know. And I mean, I think the only other really thing to pick up on is that obviously Leroy Sané picking up an injury. And he's now out for 3 weeks, I think they're saying.
Yeah.
Which... I think it's the ligament injury, so that'll be interesting to see what happens. A real shame for him, because I thought he's actually had a really good start to the season. Mm-hmm. Arguably Bayern's best forward, actually, if you kind of tally up his goals and assists. I know he's had kind of some inconsistencies like he always does, but on the whole, he's maybe contributed more than any other player, except maybe Jamal Musiala, but yeah. In general, we've seen him kind of like blossom in that kind of central role, so... It'd be a real shame if that injury was to kind of knock his stride. Or I mean, obviously, they say 3 weeks, but he could take another 2 weeks after that to get back to full fitness. So that's a pretty big hit for Bayern. But yeah, I mean, that's the only other talking point I can think of from that game, really.
Yeah, I know that the Sunday news obviously come out right after the game. Kerry Howe first to report, right, from Sport 1. a friend of the podcast. Yeah, and it looks like at least the World Cup is not in danger. That would have been a shame. He's finally in good form and then he misses the World Cup. That would have been a real shame. But yeah, he's going to be a huge loss for Bayern, I think, too, going forward. Because like the big issue with Sadio Mane, for example, has been that he hasn't been in good form. Yes, he scored in this game, but he's just... When do we start talking about the Premier League tax here, Stefan?
I think we started talking about it immediately because we could have talked about it. But yeah, it's a weird game. Like if he's going to go the whole season picking up goals in these kind of games where the hard work is being done, then it's going to be a troubling. It's going to be a troubling sell or a hard sell for Bayern fans. You know, unless you can kind of turn it on. I mean, look, there's a whole season to play, and Bayern didn't buy Sadio Mane to kind of, you know, knock in goals for fun in the Bundesliga. They bought him because they want him to help them win the Champions League. So that's ultimately what we'll base these things on. It'll be in the latter stages of the competition. But so far in these kind of tough Champions League games, the weird thing that I find in that regard is that he's been signed to help them get better in the Champions League. But in one game in particular, that Barcelona match, Julian Nagelsmann plays him out of position as this kind of workhorse out in the wings. He ends up having a terrible game. Nagelsmann says, look, it's not his fault. I played him in the wrong position. And it makes you wonder, well, what's the point of buying this guy for the Champions League if when these big crunch games do come along, you don't play him where he's supposed to play? So, I think the jury's still kind of out on Sadio Mane. It seems mean to talk about it from that point of view after he scored a goal, but... And he seemed to have a lot of fun with the mascot after the game as well. So you can kind of see how, like, you can almost see, like, the relief on his face after the game, actually, from the way, you know, just even getting a goal helps him in that regard. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it goes, won't we?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, he still has to learn, get used to the league and all that. That takes time. Whether you go from Bundesliga to Premier League, Bundesliga to Serie A, or the other way around, or any of the other leagues, I think it always takes a little bit of time to acclimatize. Let's talk about the other Super Sunday game, the one that has everyone talking, I think, around the world. And you had a brilliant exchange on Twitter, Stefan. expected points and expected goals are wonderful stats. I think they're really important, and I think they give us a full picture if you actually bother to look at the picture, which is either on the TV screen or in the stadium, because you cannot just take a stat, a naked stat, without ever watching the team actually play and make a judgment on the team, which is exactly what happened with Union Berlin, it seems, on Twitter.
So we should provide some context here in terms of Union Berlin's statistics, shouldn't we? I don't actually have them to hand, but basically the point is that after the game, I basically said, look, Union Berlin... They actually bossed Dortmund, and in the first 10 games of the season, they've beaten Dortmund, they've beaten Leipzig, and they've taken a point off Bayern Munich. And I was basically saying, look, they're the real deal. They are the real deal. They absolutely bossed games. I made a minor point saying they aren't overperforming their XG. They aren't going to come crashing back down to earth. Of course, they still could, but as far as I see it right now, I don't think that's the case. And then I had a couple of guys who cover analytics and stuff kind of jump in on that and saying, well, no, you're wrong. They are outperforming their XG. And yeah, you know, we've basically had this, we've gone back and forth on this on Twitter a few times. I know Ronan Murphy, you and him were talking about this last week in terms of, you know, Union are quite low on the league table in general for their XG, so anyone who doesn't actually bother themselves with this stuff, which is perfectly understandable if you're not like a proper football nerd, but basically XG is the numerical value for how many chances you create per game, and Union Berlin are basically like bottom of the table for that. And a lot of people were saying their XG is like half what their goals scored is, and a lot of people like yourself and I and Ronan have been saying, well, that's because in one game in particular against Schalke, they scored 6 goals, and their XG was like 1.13 or something. So that kind of skews it. If you take that game out of the context, their XG is like 10.3 and their goals scored is like 12, which is totally fine. Now, you could definitely argue that they're not scoring enough goals, but anyone who watches Union Berlin will know that they're obviously a defensive first side. They lock down teams, they make sure they don't concede, and then they've got these two really great strikers up front who can happily, you know, chase long balls all day, and they've got a pretty good track record so far of scoring goals from them. So it bothered me because we're obviously having people comment who don't even watch the league. They don't follow the context of how these teams play. They look at a bar chart, or they look at like a data set and say, well, Union Berlin are obviously been quite lucky this season. And I just don't think anyone would really argue that case, that they have been lucky. Yeah, they've had a few close scares, and through the nature of how they play, the score lines are always quite narrow, but they've been one of the best teams in Germany for about 3 or 4 years now in terms of how they play, and they've been fantastic this season, and they've been thoroughly deserving to be top of the league. In fact, I think Nagelsmann and Christian Streich both said after their game on Sunday that Union Berlin deserved to be in first place.
If you have the most points of the match day 10, then you deserve to be in first place, and it's not just, you know, it's a 4-point gap now. We're not talking about a 1-point gap or, you know, away on goal differential. It's 4 points. It's quite a bit after match day 10. That is a point, and it's a gap that could grow even further. You know, I wouldn't be so shocked if they carry a gap like that or be even bigger into the World Cup break. Obviously, it's the Bundesliga. It could also completely flip on its head and turn out differently. But I think it's really important to watch this team. And you pointed out their two great strikers. I mean, there's been a wonderful stat that was posted about Jordan, right? And as good as he is offensively, a lot of his value actually comes from his defensive work. So you have two very, very good strikers. One of them actually, you know, doing really well based on what he does on the defensive side of the pitch. Being in the upper percentile for in the top four leagues. I'm trying to find the stat. This is why I'm looking at the other screen. I'm not answering tweets. but, you know, I think that also like highlights quite a bit on why he is here it is. When you look at the pressure, for example, so he's in the top 63 percentile, he's in the top 91 percentile for tackles, 91 for interception, 99 for blocks, 89 percentile for clearances, and 94 percentile for aerial duels won in the top 5 leagues in Europe. Is this
Jordan?
That's Jordan.
Or Becker?
Yeah, that's Jordan.
Okay.
And I mean, this is, you know, they have these two great strikers, but one of those two great strikers is not only just scoring goals, he's also an enormous part of their defensive play, right? So,
There's a few things here that we should just also add about Union Berlin, which goes in their favour. Number one, that's them now played arguably the three best teams in the country. I know they played Leipzig when they were all down on their luck, but Leipzig have kind of rebounded under Rosa. They're probably going to get better as the weeks go on. Union Berlin don't have to worry about that because they've already played them. They played Bayern, they played Dortmund, and they don't have to worry about those three teams until after the winter break, obviously. Now, number two, well, this is kind of like a 2 and 3 are kind of the same point, but basically there's actually a pretty solid chance that both of their star strikers won't be going to the World Cup, I think. So, you know, Becker's not going to go. Sebastian might end up going for the US. You'll know more than I will, but from what I've read on Twitter, it's an outside bet.
Yeah.
And if you actually, you can also make that a point for the most of their squad in general, actually. So we've kind of talked about this on the show already before this season, and I've talked about it on other shows I've been on in terms of like how well do you think Union Berlin could do this season? Like, well, unlike most seasons, Bayern, Dortmund, Leipzig, Leverkusen will be coming back from that World Cup winter break with injured players, tired players, fatigued players, and Union Berlin won't. And another thing, actually, just on the back of that, one of the piece I did recently for the newsletter, and I was speaking to people at the club about, you know, what Urs Fischer does so well. One of the guys I spoke to went into so much detail about, and he actually ended up sending me like this a study that had been done on Union Berlin about this, how well Urs Fischer actually and his coaching staff. They're actually they're division leaders in terms of how they rotate their squad.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at the amount of minutes that their players get compared to their rivals, it's much lower. So they've got a much better job of rotating their team, which is obviously vital because they're such a kind of like heavy metal, full on team. So yeah, I actually think if you're talking about going the distance, I think all the factors go in Union's favour in that regard.
What a story would that be? It's interesting that you point out the rotation aspect. Jordan goes off with an injury in the second half. It looked like a small muscle tweak. I mean, they run a ton, right? They outran Dortmund by what? I had the number somewhere. It was 30 kilometers in the end. No, it was 30 more sprints, and it was about 50 more kilometers run, which is just an incredible figure. So they work hard, and you don't know, maybe Jordan just picked up a little muscle strain from that. But Leveling comes on, and they don't miss a beat, which completely underlines what you've just said about their rotation and their ability to, sort of bring in players, bring on players, and make it work, keep it working work. And I think that is a huge strength of theirs, and a huge strength that will continue probably through all the way up to the World Cup and then through the World Cup. And yeah, it's crazy. I didn't even think about what you just brought up with them having already played all the big teams. I was going to say, I mean, it's the Bundesliga. Maybe someone small will beat them next. But, there's a good chance that until match day 15, when the Bundesliga goes on break, that they can win all five of those games. Interesting. It's really interesting.
Talking about, and then to transition onto a team that don't have anything going for them right now, Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah. are we bored yet of Borussia Dortmund and everything that's going wrong there? I know you're so excited about it that you wrote yet another newsletter. So,
do you know what? I was thinking about what I'm going to write this newsletter on this week, and I was like, it has to be Dortmund. And I actually made a point in the newsletter saying, look, this is I promise this is a different point from the one I made. So basically, last week I wrote in my newsletter, look, this was obviously after the Bayern result, the Sevilla win. I was like, look, things are looking up for Dortmund, but if you actually look at their underlying numbers, they're the exact same teams that were last year, same problems, same issues, and lo and behold, a really good team like Union Berlin pulled them apart. Sevilla also, in that return leg in the Westfalen Stadion, almost pulled them apart as well. And do you know what? This game was an absolute car crash for Dortmund for so many reasons. Even if you just want to start with the lineup and the tactics that Terzic went with, if you look at that kind of, so he's kind of got this 3-5-2 formation, right? Which is a terrible testament to how poorly Schlotterbeck started the season, that he felt that he had to play three central defenders in that regard. But then we've got Sula on one side, and then we've got Rafael Guerreiro on the other flank. That, if you're playing a 3-5-2, it basically relies on your wing-backs to basically be world beaters. Those wing-backs have to dominate that end of the pitch because they're running up and down the pitch. They're your defensive unit, but they're also basically your entire outlet. And he's got Nicolas Sula and Guerreiro, who just didn't really do much throughout the match. Adeyemi, another poor game from him. Then he basically awarded Union Berlin their second goal. And I don't know, it was just such a poor game in general for Dortmund. And I just don't know where to go. This is what I basically said after the game. I was like, I don't actually know where to go from here for Dortmund because it's basically a two-thing problem. You've got a coach there who tactically seems very kind of naive, in my opinion. And even though the players seem to love working with him and seem to get on with him really well, and we see Jude Bellingham running across the pitch to give him a hug after he scores, and Nicolas Sula came out after the Bayern game saying oh, he gave us such a rousing speech in the dressing room, and that's how we were able to get that draw. The problem is, tactically, they're all over the place. And actually, if you go through every single player they signed this summer and just all their star players, nobody's actually performing that well. The only player I'd say has actually gotten slightly better this season is probably Moukoko, and that's probably just because he's actually getting game time. It's probably not that he's actually improving. He's probably just finally getting a shot because obviously Sebastian Haller unfortunately is out right now, and Modeste has been terrible. So I just struggle to give any kind of credit or pass marks to Terzic right now. But I don't know. Do you think I've been unfair, or how do you look?
No, at it? I think it's fair. I was probably in the camp that wanted Terzic to work out, while also knowing that it's unlikely that it will, because you need to be be more than you could see it at the second half or his first stint as well, that he reached the Champions League, he won the Pokal, right? But there was quite a lot of obvious stuff that didn't work out for them back then either. And what you had with him then is what you were going to get this time. And I'm just not certain that just plugging in a guy because he's a Dortmund fan and a Dortmund person through and through will get you to the next level as a club and, you know, close the gap to Bayern Munich, which is something that they talk about nonstop when you're there. So let me put it that way. If they thought Edin Terzic would turn out into Borussia Dortmund's version of Hansi Flick, that utterly fell short. And it already has. Hansi Flick had a resume that including winning the World Cup as an assistant with Joachim Löw, where it was quite obvious that he was a lot of the reasons why Germany ended up winning the World Cup, right? Because he was doing the work behind the scenes. If they thought Edin Terzic would be their version of Hansi Flick, then they should have probably looked at Hansi Flick's resume leading up to that appointment. And if they thought that the short run of results that they had when he was briefly in charge would be a good sample size for what's going to happen when they put him fully in charge, that's also a mistake, right? So I think what Borussia Dortmund need is they need someone like Terzic, who's also a good football coach. And I think they also need someone who is just willing to give this side a decent amount of structure, because I am convinced that the pieces are all there. What I'm not convinced with is that the pieces are being put together the right way. And look, no one would complain if they were 4 points behind the Bundesliga table, I think. If they were in the top four, I don't think anyone would complain. But what they are like, what, eighth now, right? They're averaging 1.6 points a game. That's not enough to reach the top four at the end of the season. And you're getting to a stage now where the goals that you set as a football club are in danger. And I tweeted this. Can you imagine the scenes if Marco Rose was in charge?
Yeah, well, do you know, it's interesting you mentioned that point about their goals, because I actually think this is why they're in this problem in the first place. And this is kind of the main topic of my newsletter this week, in the sense that I think they're genuinely in this problem where they are now, because they don't actually prioritise their footballing goals anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at that squad, and I know what you mean. There's certainly enough quality in that team to kind of to put together a team, but you compare that to the team that Klopp had. I think the common misconception that people had about Jurgen Klopp's Dortmund team is it wasn't a team full of stars. It wasn't a team full of, like, attacking flair players. It was a team full of, as we would say in the UK, grafters. You know, guys, people who, water carriers, guys who would, Jakub Blaszczykowski, you know, Kevin Grosskreutz, Marcel Schmelzer, Lukas Piszczek, you know, and Sebastian Kehl himself, you know, talking about these kind of guys. There's not enough of those players in the team anymore. And I think that's because Dortmund as a sporting project have morphed into this kind of concept where they're only really interested in finding these exciting young players that they can train up, polish up, wrap up in a nice bow, and then sell off to the Premier League. And we've seen that time and time and time again. You know, something that really stood out to me actually for when I was doing this piece, I was looking back at the players they signed and sold. And see, if you want to compare, like, you look at that Dortmund team, right, and the kind of big stars who moved on, Mario Götze, Robert Lewandowski, who also moved on to Bayern. These guys moved on after winning the Bundesliga at Dortmund, winning the Pokal, and getting to a European Cup final with Dortmund. These guys, at the time, obviously, it was heartbreaking for Dortmund fans, but you can understand it from a sporting point of view, because, like, they did everything they could at Dortmund. Compare that to Christian Pulisic and Ousmane Dembele. Dembele left the club after one season when they finished third, and Christian Pulisic never got beyond the last 16 of a cup competition with Dortmund before leaving the club. These guys never achieved anything, but they still made Dortmund like 200 million euros in transfer fees. So if you're Dortmund and you're that board, you're thinking, well, we don't even have to actually succeed at anything to keep selling these guys. So I don't know. I kind of come to the conclusion in the newsletter that, you know, asking Dortmund fans, you know, do you honestly think the club, it's the club's priority, list of priorities right now, which one do you think is more important, winning the Bundesliga or selling Jude Bellingham for 150 million euros?
Yeah. So, you know, selling Jude Bellingham is the answer, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, there's, I mean, I think Sport Eins were saying this week, today, that there's no real risk to Eden Terzic losing his job. And of course there isn't, because there's no risk to Jude Bellingham losing his market value. And until there is, they're not really going to care, are they?
Yeah, no. And it's funny too, because like, Bellingham is getting hyped quite a bit by a lot of people, and in many ways, rightfully so. But he hasn't scored in the Bundesliga since January.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been really good in the Champions League. And that's such a great symbol for Borussia Dortmund. You have all these great ballers, all these fantastic football players that don't really, that seem to forget that you really have to do it in every match. You can't just do it against Sevilla or Real Madrid in the Champions League. Guess what? You have to also do it at the Alte Försterei in Berlin, or at the Ruhr, or the Ruhrstadion in Bochum. You know, those are the places that actually fundamentally matter for this football club. And I feel that that has been somewhat forgotten in many ways. And that's also a huge difference to Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich may slip up in Madrid, right? But they get the job done in Pilsen. They get the job done in Bochum. They get the job done when no one counts on them on a Sunday night against Freiburg. And that's a huge difference.
Yeah, without a doubt. So I mean, the interesting thing with Jude Bellingham is that I actually think his appeal amongst Dortmund fans is because he is that kind of player who gets stuck in, he puts the hard work in. Yeah, he's not actually scoring enough goals or creating enough assists, at least in these kind of day-to-day games. But the guy's obviously, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see if he has some proper burnout this season, because he's just carrying so much expectation and responsibility from this Dortmund side, because there's just not enough of those players in that team. And that's just the way I look at it. And even if you want to compare it to Bayern Munich, you can even make the argument that Bayern do have those kind of Kevin Grosskreutz players, because to extend Serge Gnabry, Kingsley Coman, you know, those kind of guys, even though they are outstanding wingers and outstanding technical players in their own right, Serge Gnabry's value to Bayern Munich is that he does the hard work, you know. And I actually think Kingsley Coman does the hard work really well for Bayern. Maybe, you know, you could argue whether they're good enough attacking output. I think they're fine, but I think that's what makes them really useful players to Bayern in the long run. And if you compare, like, say, the way that Kingsley Coman and Serge Gnabry track back to what Adeyemi did in that game, it's night and day.
Yeah. And you have guys like Kimmich, who treats every practice session like it's the storming of Berlin.
Hey, look, you make that reference. I'm not making that reference.
But it is true. I've seen Kimmich at practice sessions, and he treats it like it's an end of the world. Like, it's like all or nothing matter every single time. And you have a lot of guys at Bayern Munich like that, and I think that makes a huge difference. And yeah, I mean, yeah.
Should we finish up Stuttgart quickly?
Yeah, we should, because Stuttgart might actually do something interesting, which is they have narrowed down their coaching search to Schröder, who some people know, of course, still from his time at Hoffenheim, and he's currently in charge of Ajax Amsterdam, which makes you think it's probably going to be really difficult for him to get him, because if Ajax is
unless Ajax sack him.
Yeah, but they also won 7-1 in the league this week, so not sure.
Yeah.
But the number one candidate is Jes Thorup, who was previously in charge of FC Copenhagen. He's Danish. Did really good work in Belgium previously with Gent. Then he was briefly at Genk, where he was charged just for 5 games, and then Copenhagen came along and paid his exit clause. And he did great work in Copenhagen as well. and he could be the next guy in Stuttgart. And I like this appointment because it's someone who we haven't had yet. I know I'm setting the bar very low here, but it is a little bit outside of the box. I know Danish coaches is not uncommon in German football, but this is a guy who is not tainted by previously having worked in the Bundesliga and might actually offer something new. And yeah, an interesting resume as well. So Jes Turop is the leading candidate at the moment, and probably I'd be fascinated to see how he would work out. Stuttgart, of course, won manager bounce 4-1 against Bochum. So it's, sometimes it's interesting how they, when you get sack a coach and you get an immediate response, like last week, Bochum won on their first game against Frankfurt, a result that no one saw coming. Speaking of Frankfurt, Stefan, I think you're banned from watching Frankfurt games.
Oh, do you know what? I am. I actually should be banned. I was actually going to bring this up during the Union Berlin discussion because Frankfurt are one of the few teams that have beaten them this season, typically, you know, but I've just, you know, I've given up on Frankfurt. I've completely given up on them. I love them. They're a great club, amazing fans. I'd love to support them, but nah, I just, it's so infuriating. I can't do it.
Yeah, because you don't watch, and I watched this game, and they went 5-1 against Leverkusen.
Yeah, I think I've watched three of their games from start to finish this season, and I think it's been their three defeats this year. And they're not even just defeats, they've been abjectly horrendous in each game. And then they show up the next week and beat like the team that's topped the league or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you know, this is now that we've covered Stuttgart, Leverkusen is obviously another big topic, right? Alonso, brutal. I've been asked about this on Twitter, so this is why I'm bringing it up. But that result to me shows me that there is a lot more going wrong in Leverkusen than we thought. I think the number one thing for Alonso obviously is he needs to get shit going again. Defensively, they're an absolute horrendous mess. But it's so brutal because he comes in and he hadn't had more than 2 days to actually work with them, right? Because of the schedule. And I was saying that this week is actually a big week for Leverkusen because they were knocked out of the Pokal by Elversberg. And this week is a Pokal week. So this is the first time he has a good 5 days in a row where he can get some work done on this club. So it's a big week coming up for him, I think. But yeah, it's been brutal, I think. And I think with Alonso too, this is my take on this. It's literally just rescuing the situation into the World Cup and then having the time during the World Cup to steady the ship.
Yeah, I think that's crucial. They're going to have to rebuild. And look, maybe that's the kind of saving grace from bringing a new head coach. And he can turn around and say, we need to upgrade Hideki. We have to upgrade Jonathan Tah. There's issues in the squad that I can't fix myself. And this is kind of what we talked about at the time when they appointed Xabi Alonso. I kind of said, from what I've heard from people at the club, they were really, really, really trying their best to avoid sacking Gerardo Scione because they genuinely didn't think he was the problem, you know? And if he's not the problem, then the squad's the problem. And if they keep losing and Alonso can't turn things around, then all you can really do is kind of point to the... all you can really do is just point to the squad and say, look, we have to fix that.
Yeah. Yeah, in retrospect, maybe they should have sold Patrick Schick and Diaby for whatever money.
Whatever Newcastle were offering.
Yeah, hindsight is always 20/20, obviously, but, you know, you want to take that. You want to sell your assets. If you buy a Leverkusen, you want to sell your assets when they're at a high point and not when they're at the low point. And they gave both these players contracts, right? And that's always some players play for contracts. I made this comment tongue-in-cheek about Thuram at Gladbach, right? Because Kevin Hatchett, another friend of the podcast, pointed out that he's been excellent this year, and I'm like, I just retweeted it saying Whispers contract year.
Well, we'll have to talk about him at some point. Yeah. Gladbach have really been really interesting, but I think we've probably run over this week.
But my point is rather that Leverkusen fell into the trap that they had assets that were really valuable, and that's when they should have shipped them out. That's my point here, right? And I think Gladbach, obviously they have no more control over this asset, which is their problem. But someone will pay him. And then the question is that going to work out for whoever pays him? Because he doesn't really have a good sample size in years where his contract doesn't expire. And you can make a similar you can make a similar argument with Schick and Diaby in some ways. Mm. So it's interesting that some players only seem to perform when their financial future is at stake. And that also, of course, says a little bit about recruitment at Leverkusen.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of work to do. There's no doubt about it. But there's a long season ahead as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, as you said, we're running over the allotted time of the show. It's been great. It's curious how this all works out, video, audio, etc. As always, this show is brought to you by Bet Online. I also want to thank Get German Football News, who have been really kind posting and counting our predictions every single week. We'll do another prediction podcast later this week. I know your newsletter is out. By the time this is out, I think the newsletter will be out too, right, Stefan, on Dortmund?
Yep.
And I would love to say that I already know what I'm writing my newsletter on, but I'm still thinking about it. There will be one out on Thursday, I promise. There is one out on Freiburg, and I think people liked it, so that's great. And yeah.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.